Suspense.
It's killing us. Suspense is killing us. That's what it does. Hey everybody, I'm Kyle Rosedale. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. And if it's not, welcome back. If it's your first time, where you been? Anyway, make today make sense. That's what we do.
Welcome regardless. I'm Amy Scott. I'm in for Kimberly Adams today. Thanks to everybody joining us on the podcast and on the YouTube live stream for Economics on Tap.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So we're going to do the news as we usually do. We're going to do a little bit of beverage checking. Then we'll take a break and then we'll play a game half full, half empty. Amy Scott, what are you drinking out there in Baltimore, Maryland?
Oh, it's sad today. I'm drinking some peppermint tea with some Manuka honey because I've had this.
Do you not feel good?
I don't know if you guys have had these endless colds that seem to be cycling through households, but that's me this week.
It's California, man. We don't get those winter colds. We're outside.
Oh, you totally do. You just don't call them winter colds.
No, seriously. It doesn't happen out here.
Maybe it's because your kids are East Coast phenomenon. Have grown and they're not in those germ factories that are elementary schools anymore. That could totally be.
Totally 100% could be. So you're having tea. I'm having a hazy IPA from Beechwood Brewing down in Huntington Beach. Same four-pack that I bought 2 weeks ago because I'm not drinking a whole lot of beer these days. It's tough to ramp up after dry January. I'll tell you that, man. You have a couple of beers after dry January and you're like, whoa, what is going on? So anyway.
Yeah, welcome to my world. That's me pretty much every time. So
I know. So let's do some news, I suppose, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it. You want to go first?
Okay. All right.
I feel like I've been dying to talk about this one, so I want to hear you talk about it.
The news item that I have picked, and it's a little outside our lane, but you can't not talk about this story. The filing yesterday, or maybe it was 2 days ago late in the afternoon, but I think it was yesterday, by Dominion Voting Systems saying that their suit against Fox News ought to go forward. And as part of their filing, they have submitted to the court and thus released to the public a bunch of internal documents from Fox News in which we discover that Fox News primetime hosts are deceitful, dishonest, misrepresentative, and absolutely full of it in terms of what they actually believe and what they are saying to each other and what they are saying on air. It's absolutely extraordinary. It's absolutely extraordinary. Gives lie to the whole thing.
Scary.
I just can't.
It's
terrifying.
It's appalling. It really is appalling. Definitely worth reading these documents. The concern about stock price, the concern about turning off viewers telling them the truth. It's bananas. Made me glad to work for public media. I mean, or just a media company that takes truth seriously and values it and more than the bottom line.
Absolutely. And look, Fox News has an absolute First Amendment right to exist, and nobody's saying shut them down or anything. But one would hope that, oh God, even as these words come out of my mouth, I understand how naive they are. One would hope that Fox News viewers, having now seen behind the curtain, would take Fox News for what it is, which is a propaganda outlet, but I guess they won't. I don't get it.
Yeah, I did check the Wall Street Journal story about this today.
Oh, I know.
Because it's another Murdoch-owned company. And, it's there. You can read it right there. So I hope people see
Brian
this.
Brian Stelter. Yeah, totally. Brian Stelter, who wrote... Brian Stelter, who used to work for CNN, but got fired actually for in some part his stance on what Fox News was doing, because Chris Licht, the new CEO of CNN, wanted to be more down the middle. Brian Stelter wrote a piece for The Atlantic that I highly recommend that we'll put on the show page. Totally interesting take from a guy who's been watching television news, for a long time, and just talking about the deceit and the lies and the misinformation. It's truly just. It's terrible, 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 terrible. And I can't handle it. Anyway, what do you got?
Well, it's depressing in a different way. Might as well get this out of the way before our game. We'll cheer you up in a minute, promise. So, I spent the better part of last year reporting on sea level rise and housing in South Florida. And today there was kind of an interesting update to what we were basically looking at, which is, a housing market in Florida that seems to be untethered from the reality of the risks they face from climate change. So Axios did a piece about this study published yesterday in the journal Nature Climate Change. And it looks at basically how real estate prices are overvalued in many, many states when considering the flood risk that's sort of unpriced. And so they estimate that real estate prices are overvalued nationally by as much as $237 billion
Oh my
when
gosh.
compared to flood risk. Yeah. In Florida, which is no surprise, that's the biggest number. It's at $50 billion. In California, $17 billion. Texas, $10 billion. Several other states are in the $3 to $4 billion range. And there's some pretty high-profile groups involved in this report. It's a collaboration between the Federal Reserve, the First Street Foundation, which is a nonprofit that models flood risk and other climate hazards, as well as a couple of universities. A lot of this unpriced risk, which I think is interesting, comes from properties that are technically outside of FEMA's 100-year flood zone. So those are houses with a 1% annual chance or probability of flooding. But that's increasingly going to change as more and more properties are in flood zones, not just from coastal flooding caused by sea level rise and storm surge, but from, you know, you're familiar with this now, pluvial flooding, the heavy rainfall that's intensifying as well.
I didn't know
And
that's what it was
so,
called. That's a great name.
yeah, I know.
Pluvial.
You know, I think this may be the first time I've actually said that word because I try to avoid jargon, but I guess maybe words like pluvial have to get in all of our vocabularies. But anyway, a quote from the study is, in general, highly overvalued properties are concentrated in counties along the coast with no flood risk disclosure laws, meaning a seller doesn't have to disclose that the property floods, and where there is less concern about climate change. Low-income households are at greater risk of losing home equity from price deflation, and municipalities that are heavily reliant on property taxes for revenue are vulnerable to budgetary shortfalls. Which is, you know, basically what our whole second season of How We Survive is about. And I don't mean this as just one giant plug, although I kind of do. But
No,
what I
totally. You
found
should.
interesting,
Kidding me?
I'm glad the Fed and others are paying attention to this, but thinking of this as a bubble, I think, is especially scary because bubbles pop, you know, and it leads to calamity. So what happens when the market starts to price in this risk? Does it happen all at once? Is it more of a deflation? I don't know, but I think it's going to be really scary, frankly.
I'll bet you there's going to be some big insurance company that's going to come out and give some estimate, and then that's going to start the stampede. And then it's going to be like, you know, how do you go broke, right? It happens very slowly and then all at once. And I think that's what's going to happen.
Yep. Yeah.
You know? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and you got to wonder
Man.
who's shorting the market, who's gonna somehow find a way to
Oh,
profit from
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because look, this is a terrible thing to say, but Wall Street will make a boatload of money on this. Wall Street will make
Yeah,
a
and the
boatload of money.
taxpayers will be the ones that are
Right.
left holding the bag.
Of course. Totally. On that note, we're going to take a quick break, then we'll come back. We'll do a round of half full, half empty with Drew Chostad. Here we go. Half full, half empty is the game. Drew Jostedt is the guy in charge. He does the music as well, as you will hear in the credits. He gives us news topics. We tell you how we're feeling about them. Drew Jostedt, begin.
Are you half full or half empty on using an algorithm to set the rent prices?
Wow.
That's
know.
A good one. We talked about this on tech this week.
Says
the
the
reason
real
I
estate
said that is
reporter. Go
because I
ahead. Well,
actually
that's so
know
funny.
something
I
about
heard
it for
that
a
interview,
change.
but it was. I heard that interview, but it was 4:43 in the morning, and I hadn't had my coffee yet, so it kind of went by me.
Don't
To
blame
be
you for
completely
not quite
honest,
processing it.
total transparency.
Well, so I'm half empty because this all came about because ProPublica did an investigation of this company called RealPage that sells software that helps landlords set rent prices, but found that this, you know, may be artificially inflating rents because if you have a market where a lot of landlords are using this and sharing their data about what they're charging, and even in some cases encouraged by the software to withhold apartments so that they can charge more, There is a risk of, if not collusion, at least an artificially expensive right. market, which we know is, you know, increasingly burdening people who pay rent. I would say I'm half empty, although I did once have to set the rent on my house. We rented it out for a year, and it was really hard to figure out what to charge.
So how did you do it? No, that's it. I'm dead serious. How'd you do it?
Yeah, well, we honestly, we looked at our mortgage payment, and we were like, we got to at least cover that plus some expenses of maintenance.
Plus a little bit.
We
sure,
weren't looking to make a profit, and we kind of looked around at other comps, you know, to see if it seemed fair, and it seemed fine. It sold. Certainly, I wasn't in the business to make money, but it is a bit of an art, I would say.
I'm sure it is. So in the end, did you get what you were asking for in rent, or did people push back? How did it work?
We did, yeah. This was a one-off, you know, sabbatical kind of situation. We found another academic couple who were looking for a temporary place to live. It worked out really well. They were great.
Huh.
I think if we had been like renting a vacant house, we probably would have had to pay more attention to the market and probably could have gotten a little more. But honestly, we just really wanted it to be easy.
Yep. I totally
and I can understand.
I
mean, companies using the software want it to be easy too, right? And this thing spits out a number and you're like, okay, that's what the going rate.
Okay, sounds good.
But
to
it
me.
Just,
boom.
It takes out that potential for negotiation that you might have. And so anyway, the Justice Department's looking into it. There have been several lawsuits. It's going to be interesting to watch where that goes.
Yeah. All right, Drew, number two.
Half full or half empty on public policy video games.
So this is an interview I did with a woman who is the chair of the Federal Games Guild. They do policy-oriented games for the federal government, the most well-known of which is probably something called the Fiscal Ship game from, I guess it's Brookings. And you have to you set yourself a bunch of policy objectives, then you try to figure out how to match the federal budget to those policy objectives. I will tell you, it's really hard. Her name was, oh my God, Elizabeth Newberry. She's at the Wilson Center. Super interesting, really hard. But look, I think gamification is a valid educational and public policy awareness tool. I'm half full.
I would say I'm half full too. It's a great way to learn. I mean, I've seen my kids learn so much from games.
I think
it's awesome. But Kai, didn't we do something like that years ago? Didn't Marketplace have like budget?
We did.
Game?
Budget Hero.
It was really popular. Yes.
It was Budget Hero, and it was through, I think we did it through, God, I don't even know who. It was St. Paul and somebody. But anyway. Yeah, it's really hard. Those games are really hard.
I wonder if the Internet Archive can resurface that
I'm
for
sure
us.
It does. Somebody
if
look
so,
up Budget
we'll put
Hero.
It on the show page.
Oh, my God. You and I have been here too long, but that's a whole different podcast. Drew, save us. Let's go. Next, please.
Half full or half empty on incorporating ASMR into your company's marketing?
Okay.
Oh, God, my scalp.
I get confused every time about what ASMR is. Can somebody help me? By which I mean Amy Scott, you?
Yeah, I'll do my best. I can never remember exactly what it stands for. It's like autonomous.
Stands for
Drew.
Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response.
Which means what?
Some people report getting this like tingly, pleasing sensation when they hear certain sounds, like fingernails tapping on a hard surface. I'm tapping a book here. Don't get weird on me. and it's really popular. There are all these videos. And so we had this guy on the show, I think on Wednesday when you were out, who has this business. He cleans rugs and he posts videos of the rug cleaning
online.
Oh,
I've seen those. They've gone insanely viral. Oh my God. They're so watchable though. This is really weird that I'm actually getting fired up about this. Those rug videos, they take these dirty, disgusting old rugs and they clean them and they shampoo them and this and that. Wow. That's crazy that's all about.
Yeah, it's super satisfying to watch.
Yes.
It is really interesting. And he was just so charming. He's making like $1,000 a month or something on the side doing
this.
He's not shutting down his cleaning business, but I thought that was pretty cool. So I would say I'm
half.
Wait, this is marketing. The question was specifically about marketing.
Wait, Drew, what was the question? Give it to us again.
Oh, I don't know. I guess the question was half full or half empty on boosting your business with ASMR, if you're going to be technical about it.
You know.
Well, this guy in Accra, Ghana, I'm half full.
Yeah, sure. Whatever. I mean, look, you got to make a living, right? Come on. Wow, that's so interesting about the rug guy. Now I have to go back and listen. Of course, now we discover that I don't listen to my own show when I'm not on my own show, but that's a whole different
thing. I know. I'm just going to milk it for all I can.
That's right. That's right. All right. Next, Drew, please help.
Taco Bell is opening a cantina in Hollywood. Are you half full or half empty on having alcohol at your Taco Bell?
I'm half full. Next question. A beer and a taco?
Yeah, it doesn't need discussion. Well,
right.
So what, in California, one location?
It's the first one in Los Angeles County. I don't know for sure statewide.
You know, I have to say I'm half empty, and I'll tell you why. Because I think of Taco Bell as, like, where I go for cheap food that's, like, okay. But when I go out for a drink, you know, I'm expecting something a little more, I don't know. I can't get excited about a booze in the drive-thru.
Which, anyway. Oh, my Lord. Drew, let's move on.
Let's fire up the poll.
Oh, is this
it?
All right, fire up the poll. So those of you who are listening in real time on the YouTube live stream, you know what to do. Hopefully Mel or somebody is going to feed me the answers once all y'all do the poll thing, because I have not yet figured out how that works. But Drew's going to read it. Emmy and I will kill some time. We'll give you like a minute to do the poll, and then we will see how you do on half full, half empty, because look, it's a challenge. Drew, go.
Are you half full or half empty on the trend of TV and movies with more sort of eat the rich type storylines?
That's a good one.
All right. All right. Holding on here. We're holding. I should say that this was a story that aired on Marketplace on Wednesday when I was out, so I have not heard it. It was Kristen Schwab, and I do understand it was a very good piece, very Kristen-y piece. She's finding her voice, and she's doing great stuff for us, and I love her pieces.
Yeah, it's been really fun.
So I'm going to have to go back and listen. All right, well, we'll see.
You won't have to hear me. You can just skip the lead.
Because really, that's what it's all about. It's somebody else doing my job while I'm taking the day off. I'm like, I can't handle that. I'm sorry. I can't handle that.
Well, I think vacations are appropriate. You should just separate yourself from the work.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but it's all just how hung up. Whatever. Never. It's not Kai's therapy session today, is it? It's all about how hung up I am on my professional identity. But anyway.
That is a whole other podcast.
It is a whole other podcast.
I'm here for actually, it.
No, I'm not. No, I'm not doing that.
I have thoughts.
It's been too long. It's been too long.
All right. So do we have any results?
I don't know. So look, it's been 173 votes. We're going to give you guys 10 more seconds.
Wow.
And then somebody is going to have to Slack me the result.
Well, you guys have to weigh in first.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Oh,
Amy,
we have to weigh
first.
In first? Okay.
Whew. All right. Amy, you go first.
Oh, well, okay. So I'm half full because I may have my own class hang-ups, and I think it's super fun to make fun of the rich and enjoy their suffering. And I thought Kristen's story, which I recommend, was great because it explains sort of how what we've all collectively been through the past several years has kind of contributed to this trend. And all the shows she talks about, I mean, I haven't seen Succession, but The White Lotus.
Oh, really?
Glass Onion, What are some of the other ones?
The Menu.
The
Menu
dark
was
stuff.
Weird. Is that the one with was that the one with Ralph Fiennes?
Yes, where he plays the chef.
I walked out. I had to walk out. It was too
you
weird.
You did?
I walked out of my living room. I mean, it was totally bizarre. Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
And I'm a huge Ralph Fiennes fan, but are you kidding me with that thing? Glass
Onion,
I have a
feeling I know when you walked out. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What White Lotus, I made it like through halfway through the first season and then bailed. Succession, you have to watch Succession. It is incredible.
Okay.
Forget the whole eat the rich thing and billionaires doing all this stuff and that's disgusting and all that jazz. The performances and the dynamic and the way it's done is just spectacular. Truly.
Cool.
And the next season, the next season drops on the 26th of March. Believe me when I tell you that you and Alex, after the kids go to bed, you guys should just binge watch it. Honest to God.
All right.
It's so good.
I know what
good.
I'm doing tonight.
It's so, so good. It's like gripping. Anyway, so here's the poll results. And they were there. Mel, God damn it. All right. Sorry. Now we're going to get the E. Eat the Rich storylines in movie and television. The poll is complete with 178 votes. 74% of you are half full. 25% are half empty. And clearly 1% cannot make up its mind. So yeah, Eat the Rich is good, I guess, is the deal.
We like Eat the Rich.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, right. I mean, and not to drag this out, but wealth inequality, it in many ways is the worst thing that we face in our society. It's responsible for so many other problems. And so let's have a little fun. You know, I'm sure not all rich people are like that, but it's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, it is fun to watch. All right. So thank you for participating in the poll, everybody. And with that, I think we're done, right? Charlton, hit that thing and we can move on. All right. We have made it through another week. Congratulations, everybody. We are done for today. We are off for Monday, President's Day. In the meanwhile, send us your comments, your thoughts, your questions, something you want us to cover, something you don't like that we covered, whatever. Honestly, just whatever. Let us know. 508-UB-SMART. Those are all letters. UBSMART. Or email us, makemesmart@marketplace.org.
Make Me Smart is produced by Courtney Berg-Seeker. Today's episode was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. Drew Jostad wrote the theme music to Half Full, Half Empty. Antonio Barreras is our intern.
Mel Rosenberg, Emily McCune, and Antoinette Brock are the team behind our Friday game. Marissa Cabrera is our acting senior producer. Bridget Bodner got kicked upstairs. She is the director of podcast. Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital and on demand. And we're out of time.